Can I just ask you, maybe just round your tables, I want to think this morning a little bit about our own culture in a particular area, okay? I'm not going to tell you what that is, although you've probably seen my whole slide, PowerPoint up there now, so forget about that for a moment. Don't look at that. Now everybody's looking at it, aren't you? But I want to think about our own culture in a particular area of life, really, if you like, this morning. And so what I thought might be helpful to do is round your tables, if you're comfortable with doing so, okay, I know not everybody likes doing this, but just for a sort of few moments, just talk amongst yourselves about what you think culture is. Now, I know it's a big, massive word and concept, but just around your tables, have a little think, just for a moment, about what you think culture is, and then I'll get one or two of you to just shout it out, if that's okay. Won't spend too long on this, 2 or 3 minutes. Tell me what you think culture is then. So habits, community, very good. Okay, so history, knowledge, things that we accumulate from our backgrounds and things, very helpful. Brilliant, yeah. Anything else? Anyone? Another table? Okay, so other people's sort of experiences in their own particular ethnic origin, place of ethnic origin, yeah? Yeah. Religion, okay, yeah. Okay, the way we do things around here. That's it, yeah. You can see that Sharon used to be a teacher because she put her hand up at the back then. Please, miss. Talking posh in it. Right, okay. Is that what Google said? A way of being. Okay, brilliant. Brilliant. Okay. So, I mean, culture's a huge thing, isn't it, really? And we probably could spend all day just talking around that, really. I'm going to pick on the easy one, okay, that Sharon presented at the back there, really. So, culture is the way that we do things around here. That's how it has been described. But you know, the way that we get to that is like very, sometimes culture's really obvious. Sometimes it's subliminal. Sometimes, you know, it obviously is affected, like we're saying, about our backgrounds and our history, and affects a lot of different things, doesn't it? But just at that sort of raw, sort of, it's the way that we do things around here sort of point, I want to think about one particular area of. Are we able to use this, Andy? Is this going to work or not, or pass? Can we? Because it would be helpful if we can get something up, really, even if we just work off of that, really. So let's go to number two, if that's okay. So I want to think a little bit about the word fail, okay, failure, and how do we, what's our culture as a group of people, as a church, towards the idea of failure. Now, I hate the word failure because it just sounds so horrible, doesn't it? So final, really, and almost judgmental and harsh, but I can't think of a better word, really, without being all wussy, really. So so I'm going to just go with the word fail at the moment. And what is our culture in relation to failure? And in one sense, you know, again, failure of what? Because failure probably takes place in lots of different ways, doesn't it? There's different types of failure, aren't there? So there's moral failure, which you know, might be where we cheat on in some particular situation, cheat in our business deals, or cheat on one another, or whatever. It might be a sexual thing. It might be you know, that you've not kept your word, or whatever. Maybe something like that. So something that's a more moral failure. It could be that it's just a mistake. You've just made an error of judgment, and we've all been there, haven't we? And so you had two decisions to make, and you made the wrong one, and it transpires that you just made an error of judgment, and it was just a pure mistake. Or the other one might be a missed opportunity, that a failure comes because we didn't make the most of the opportunity that was before us, and after a period of time we look back and you think, you know, I wish I'd done that then, I wish I'd done it. And because missed opportunities can be because we just didn't seize the moment, we didn't see the opportunity, or it could be that because we just were too lazy or couldn't be bothered. Whatever, we didn't feel we had the right to do something, or whatever it may be, but there comes a missed opportunity. Now, I'm going to ask you to talk around your tables again, okay, just for a couple of moments, and discuss together, what, if you're happy to do so, that is, what do you think our attitude should be towards failure? What do you think our attitude should be towards failure? Two or three minutes, okay. We won't ask for feedback from the tables, particularly where I noticed for a while it was just husbands and wives talking, okay? Although we would love to, wouldn't we? And, you know, that's you could have carried on that conversation for the rest of our time this morning, couldn't you, really, talking around? So I'm guessing that probably around your tables, that the sorts of things that will be coming back would include the idea that perhaps we approach, it depends on the different types of failure, doesn't it? That our approach is going to be different according to what the failure is. Would that be fair? Would that be the sorts of things that you were thinking about? Well, I guess be true as well. So let's just keep that in mind there, shall we, really, that perhaps our approach to failure is different according to what has actually taken place. And in particular, perhaps our response might be different to moral failure than to somebody just making a mistake. Maybe, okay. That's and equally, when we're thinking about that sort of making mistake, for the worst thing to do if we're fearful of making a failure is to sort of do nothing, isn't it, really? To sort of give up trying, okay? So when we're talking about life in general terms, you know, failure shouldn't be something that stops us, should it? We keep going. And we could sort of start thinking about that this morning. But what I really want to be thinking about this morning is about our attitude as a community, as a church, as a group of people who call themselves Christians, towards that whole idea of failure. And we've only got short space time together, so I want to just think a few thoughts very quickly from some of the ancient wisdom, you know, the wisdom literature we thought a bit about last week, and then we're just going to think about a situation or an occurrence in the life of Jesus and just how Jesus handled one particular guy's failure. Is that right? Just for a few moments. Okay, won't be too long this morning. It's not worth me clicking this thing, is it? Put it down. Great. Okay, so we can go to the next slide. The next one, actually. We won't look at that one this morning. So, tweets from the ancients. So, a guy called Solomon recorded, I don't know whether he wrote this or whether he just discovered it, really, but he said, "A person's wisdom yields patience, but it is to one's glory to overlook an offense." Now, I would define glory as the essence of a person, an essence of a thing. So when we talk about the glory of God, we're talking about the essence of God, who God truly is. And when we see his glory, we see him who he truly is. And so it seems that perhaps Solomon here, or the writer of this particular proverb, is saying that the way that we respond to somebody's failure, to their offense, okay, gives something away regarding who we are. Our response to other people's failures, our response to our own failures maybe as well, betrays something of who we are. Now, that's quite a challenging thought in its own right, isn't it? You know, what sort of person am I? And does that leak out when I am responding to other people's? The next one, Andy, if that's okay. Again, sticking with Proverbs, some tweets from the ancients. Hatred stirs up conflict, but love covers over all wrongs. Whoever would foster love covers over an offense, but whoever repeats the matter separates close friends. It seems that we're digging into there that this theme in relation to offense, the ancients, if you like, the wisdom literature is helping us to see that somehow or another the love is part of the way that we respond to wrongdoing. That it would be love that covers over wrongs. That whoever would foster love covers over an offense. And maybe that's just a thought we want to just park there for a moment, we'll come back to. What is it that would motivate me to respond well to somebody's failure? I mean, in business terms, you might have other agendas. I heard about a guy who lost a particular business. I think it was $12 million, okay? He made a mistake in the way that he had handled $12 million worth. And so he went to his boss with his resignation. I think it was IBM, actually. And he said to him, I'm really sorry. I expect you want this now, the way that I've lost the company, $12 million. And his boss gave him the letter back and said, "Yeah, I'm not accepting that now. I've just spent $12 million educating you." How do we respond to other people? Yeah. Okay. So I want to think a little bit then about how we respond. Can we go to the next slide, Andy? Go back right to the beginning of Genesis. And we have the story, don't we, of Adam and Eve. Genesis 1 through to 3, God creates the world and he gives, and then on the world he creates a fantastic place for humanity to live. And Adam and Eve live there, and the only thing they're told that they can't do is to eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. In other words, the only thing that they are told they can't be is God. They can't define what is right and wrong. It's not for them to define morality. It's not for them to define what is right and wrong. But that's the one thing they choose to try and embrace. And as they take from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, the next thing that happens is God takes his walk in the garden, his daily walk with them in the garden. And as he turns up, they are hiding. And so God, as they're hiding, God calls to them and says, "Where are you? Where are you?" And so their first response, Adam and Eve's response to what the first failure, if you like, that is recorded in Scripture, is to hide. And that's often our response, isn't it? That when we've done wrong, when we've failed, or when we've made a mistake, whatever, that our response, our natural response, is to withdraw, isn't it? And to disengage with what's going on and to perhaps hide. And God's response is to woo them out again from their failure. God knew where they were. You know, God would be the worst person in the world to play hide and seek with, wouldn't he? He knows. But he chooses to not betray that he knows. And he says, "Where are you? Where are you?" In other words, I want you to come towards me. I want you to come out and to face what has happened here with me. I want you to come towards me. And the whole of the rest of Scripture, I guess, really, is part of that happening, of God wooing us out of our mistakes, wooing us towards him. That when we want to hide, when we want to withdraw, God's saying, "Will you come? Will you come? Will you move towards me?" And today, maybe, some of us, we might find ourselves in a place where we think we failed in some way or another. And God is saying to you, "Where are you?" He is wooing you. He is drawing you back towards himself. Because only in the presence of God, I guess, really, only in that relationship with God do we truly deal with anything properly, fully, in its best capacity. So let's move forward now, shall we, to the master, really, and think a little bit about a situation. Go to the next slide, Andy. Jesus and Pete. Okay, I hope it's not disrespectful to call the Apostle Peter Pete, but you know, he was a guy just like you and I, you know, wasn't he? Just one normal person, really. And Peter is one of my favourite characters in the Gospels, actually. I don't know about you. I don't know if we've all read the Gospels here. I know many of us have, and if you haven't, let me encourage you to do so. Okay, but in the Gospels, we see Peter is one of Jesus' closest disciples, okay? We're just going to get into the story for a moment. Is that all right? Okay, just going to get into the story for a couple of minutes and think about it. Peter was one of Jesus' closest disciples. He was a fisherman, and Jesus called him out of fishing to come and follow him. Probably a young man, really. You know when you see all these spooky stained glass windows or artwork depicting the apostles? They always look like really like, can I really say, like they're sitting on an orange, don't they? Do you know what I mean? It's like just this sort of spooky sort of image, really. And yet, actually, they were just, you know, Peter was probably a young guy at this stage, probably early 20s. And he'd been with Jesus, you know, and most young men at that sort of, youngsters at that age, they believe they can take the world, don't they, you know? And Jesus has taken him on board and pumped him up with vision, belief that he can be part of this great new mission that Jesus is involved with. He's been traveling with Jesus. He saw Jesus feed thousands of people just from a little boy's lunchbox, you know. He was there when Jesus challenged the religious elite of the day, and he was with Jesus when he was teaching, and every word that he said sort of somehow brought life to Peter's soul. You know, he'd been with him. He'd seen Jesus when he'd healed people. He'd seen Jesus raise people from the dead, you know. Jesus said Peter had been walking around with Jesus for 3 years, you know, just getting pumped up with this whole thing as a young man dreaming dreams of what would be for the future. In fact, on one occasion, Jesus actually commissioned him as an apostle and sent him out to do the things that Jesus had been doing. Peter had been used to release people from demons, to see sick people healed. You know, he'd seen some amazing miracles and God had used him to do some amazing miracles. He'd been there one day when Jesus went up a mountain and started shining, like, you know, and, you know, whiter than anybody could ever bleach clothes, you know. And so Peter had been on quite a journey with Jesus and he'd seen a lot. And then after about 3 years or so, Jesus starts saying things that really confuse Peter a little bit. And he starts saying things like, he's going to die. And Jesus, Peter, whoa, mate, no. Well, actually, I don't know whether he called Jesus mate, but he said, no, Lord, that's not going to happen. And then they're having Passover, getting ready for Passover one evening. And Jesus, around that meal, Passover was a big Jewish feast that they have every year, a very significant feast. And Jesus says, actually, tonight, all of you are going to abandon me. All of you are going to deny me. And Peter, because he was always the first to speak, says, even if everybody else does, wedge between him and the rest of his team, you know, even if everybody else does, I won't let you down, Jesus. Even if I have to die, I won't abandon you. And Jesus says to Peter, actually, you will. And in fact, before the cock crows three times, you will deny me. You'll deny me three times. You are going to let me down, Pete. And you can imagine what's going on in this young man's heart now. You know, I thought you believed in me, Jesus. You told me that I would be a fisher of men. You've empowered me to go and heal. But you know, Jesus, I guess there's a bit of confusion, a bit of, you know, going on in there. And then surely that is what happens. They're out, you know, walking out, and a whole group of soldiers turns up and they arrest Jesus. And they'd seen Jesus take on bigger situations than that. A whole crowd of people, a whole town, try to push him over a hill one day, and Jesus just walked through the middle of them. You know, hardened soldiers had been sent to arrest him and then gone back to the people who had sent them saying, oh, I don't know, he just said some amazing things. You know, they'd seen Jesus defuse worse situations, and this time he let himself get arrested. In fact, actually, Peter had chopped off one of the guy's ears, and Jesus, he probably thought, come on, I'll save you, Jesus. And Jesus said to him, Peter, don't do that. And heals the guys, put the ear back on, you know. I don't know what that would have done to Peter. But, you know, I'm just trying to say that this guy's, and then he just runs away and leaves him. He starts to fulfill what Jesus said would happen. And then, through that night, that's actually what happens. Three times, Peter is asked and said, you know, you were one of his disciples, weren't you? You were one of Jesus' followers. And Peter denied. In fact, at one point, he calls down curses from heaven and says, no, I'm not one of his followers. I don't even know him. And then the third time he does it, he says that Jesus looked at him, and then the cock crowed, and Peter went outside and wept bitterly. You know, I was trying to lay in bed last night, just trying to think about how Peter's heart must have felt, how his emotions, you know, it must have been really, really raw, thinking, this guy invested all this in me, and he knew I would let him down, and I said I wouldn't, and I did. You know, that's a pretty huge fail, isn't it, really? And then Jesus dies, and Peter, I guess, thinks, well, that's it then, done. And I couldn't, even my last encounter I had with him was a negative one. He did all that for me, and yet, actually. And then he rises from the dead after 3 days. And Peter then meets him. And I don't know about you, but if you've let somebody down and then they come back from the dead, you know, to get you, you know, that's pretty scary. And maybe Peter's thinking, oh my goodness. And we don't really see any real strong interaction with Peter until we get to this passage that's been read to us this morning from John chapter 21. And you know, just get your head into this. Peter's out fishing. So Jesus has risen from the dead. He hasn't really sort of told them all what's going to happen yet, really. They don't really know where they're going to go from this. And so Peter basically just does the thing that he goes back to his old way of life. This young man had been commissioned to be an apostle, to be somebody who was going to be doing all these great miracles and stuff. And now there's nothing wrong with being a fisherman. Unless you've been commissioned to be an apostle, do you see what I mean? And so, but he thinks, well, what am I going to do? He just goes back to fishing. And Jesus turns up one morning, they've just come back in, and replicates the miracle that took place when Jesus first called Peter. He was out fishing all night, didn't catch anything. Jesus is at the store and says, put your net on the other side, and they pull it in, and there's loads and loads of fish. And I guess at that point, suddenly Peter's heart comes alive. He jumps out and runs. He says, it's the Lord. And you know, just Jesus begins to woo him back again, doesn't he? I want to just think about how Jesus restores Peter here, how he responds to this. Because actually, what happens next is just significant, I think, really. You know, the first thought is that Jesus replicates the miracle. He gets straight onto the common ground of calling with Peter. He connects with him again. But then what he does, he sits down and has breakfast with him. You know, he doesn't immediately, you know, you imagine Peter sitting there thinking, well, how am I going to address this? What am I going to say? Do I say sorry to him? You know, oh, that seems a bit insufficient. You know, oh, he must be really uptight with me. Oh, you know, he's scared. You know, what would you be doing? You'd be sitting there thinking, do I talk to him or do I just hide in the background? You know, I'll hide in the background. I'll sit here. But what Jesus does with him, he just sits down and has breakfast. Possibly he cooked the breakfast even, you know. And I don't know about you, but I just think that's a beautiful picture. We're talking about culture here, about the way that we address people's failures. He didn't tear into Peter. He didn't sit there and go straight for the jugular and say, well, actually, I want to talk to you, young man, does he? He says, let's have breakfast together. Let's rekindle our friendship, shall we? Let's be mates. Let's have a chat. I guess they were sitting around that breakfast. I don't know, I'm taking a little bit of license here. Let's start talking and chatting and, you know, and saying, gee, we had some times, didn't we? You know, Jesus chatting. We had some days. Do you remember that day we went to that guy's house and, you know, we'd been healing people for ages and ages and ages and then they ripped a hole in his roof. Do you remember that poor bloke's house? You know, can you remember his face? What he looked like? Oh, my goodness. You know, can you imagine it? Can you? Reminiscing about the times they'd had together. Chatting away, you know, the time, Jesus, you walked on the water, you know, and we saw you bobbing like that, you know, on the water, coming towards us. And when you just fell asleep and we were all scared stiff, you know, and that it's just chatting about the times they shared together and friendship. You see, sometimes we want to go straight in and fix people, don't we? Do you know what I mean? Sometimes we want to do that, don't we? We want to just get straight back into somebody's life. And actually, sometimes what we've got to do to help people overcome failure is just to be friends for a bit. To say, you know, I don't, whether you're right or wrong, I just want you to know I'm your friend still. I'm your mate. A text, a chat, whatever it may be. So Jesus, the next thing Jesus says to him is, Peter, do you love me? In fact, actually, he says, do you love me more than these? You know, it gets back on, you remember the tweets from the ancients, the premises of love. In other words, what he's doing here now is rekindling Peter's love. He's saying, Peter, do you love me? Peter says, of course you know I love you, Jesus. And he asks him three times Jesus, he failed Jesus, of course. Three times he draws out this, do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me more than these? And somehow or another in that he rekindles, you know, there's no question whether Jesus loves him. But he rekindles the love relationship between them. And sometimes in that restoring or overcoming of failure, we've got to get back onto the premise of love. See, love keeps no record of wrongs, does it? Love is patient. Love is kind. You know, love is. Love is not a gooey thing out there somewhere. It's about action. It's about attitude. It's about the things we do for one another. And Jesus restores that with Peter and says, you know, I want, you know, Jesus didn't need to hear it from Peter, but he said, it was almost like he's saying to Peter, I need to hear you say it, Peter, but more than that, you need to hear yourself say this. See, sometimes when we've let God down, when we've failed other people even, sometimes we need to hear ourselves say, God, I love you. We need to use that language out to God again, because somewhere in that we're pronouncing our commitment again, aren't we? You know, it's no good, you know, the saying, well, people know I love, you know, but I know my spouse knows I love them. Sometimes you have to say it, don't you? It needs to be said. And Jesus rekindles that sort of relationship between him and Peter. And then he recommissions him, he repurposes him. Each time he says to him, feed my sheep, feed my lambs, you know, tend my sheep. In other words, what he's doing, he is saying to this man who he has trained and shaped as a shepherd, get back into your shepherding role, boy. Get back into the role that I've given to you. He repurposes him. And then the fourth thought here, I guess, really, which is quite a challenging one, is that somehow or not, everybody else had to accept what Jesus had done here. Fast forward a few weeks, the day of Pentecost, a great mighty wind comes from heaven, lots of people, see what's going on. Who's the man who gets up and preaches the first gospel message of the New Testament age and sees thousands give their life to Christ? Who's the man? It's Peter, isn't it? You know, Peter's the guy. He gets up, and everybody else was expected to accept him. Despite, they'd all seen the failure, they'd all seen what he'd done wrong, but Jesus had recommissioned him. Jesus had reconnected with him. Jesus had restored him into this love relationship, and everybody else was expected to go along with that. So, what's our culture, really? What's our culture as a church when it comes to failure? And of course, really, we're talking about, there's a whole mixture of failures there with Peter, isn't there? Some of it is moral failure. Some of it is just missing the opportunity. Some of it is he's just mixed up in his head, you know. Poor young guy's head is all over the place. What do you expect, really, you know? What is our culture in that sense? Are we copying the master in the sense that helping one another through failure, helping people who are not believers yet through their failures, helping whatever sphere we find ourselves in failure? What is our approach to that? Is it we're just going to keep our friendship alive with people? So often we reject people, don't we, on the basis of their failure, when really we've got to just keep the friendship going, saying, look, I'm still your friend. Help people to rediscover the basis of love. And help people to find a purpose again. Maybe there are some of us here today that are in that place where we feel, you know, I've just blown it with God, and I just not, and we're all with somebody else, and you just find yourself thinking, you know, I want to hide. God's never going to accept me. God doesn't want me. I want to say to you today that the same Jesus that had breakfast with Peter wants to have breakfast with you. This same Jesus, he said to Peter, do you love me? Still says to you, do you love me? And this same Jesus, who said to Peter, be the shepherd that you're meant to be, he's saying to you, be what you're meant to be. And this same Jesus is saying to us as a community of people, accept what I do. Accept what I do. Be like me. Do the things that I do. Let's just sit for a few moments, shall we, in prayer before God. And our time is pretty much gone. But what I'd like to do is just, where you are, invite you to think about two thoughts. Is there any sense in which something that you perceive as failure in your life is making you hide? I want to ask you today, that as we're sitting here in silence, just for a few moments, if that's you, for you to say to God, here I am. Come and have breakfast with me. The other question I want to ask you to think about, is there any sense in which you are not allowing somebody else to overcome their failure? And if that's the case, I want to ask you to talk to the Lord about that as well. Failure is the business of the cross. There was no failure, there would be no cross. New starts is the business of the resurrection.